From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, October 3rd, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at mainegardens.org.
Two dozen attorneys general around the U.S., including Aaron Frey of Maine, filed a legal action today formally opposing Purdue Pharma's plan to hand out $38 million in bonuses to company executives. The AGs say Purdue requested authorization for the multi-million-dollar incentive, bonus, and severance plans just 2 weeks after declaring bankruptcy and while embroiled in lawsuits related to the opioid epidemic. In a statement, Attorney General Frey says the bonuses are yet another example of how Purdue's executives, including the Sackler family, continue to seek to profit from the opioid crisis. The Sackler family owns Purdue Pharma. In June, the Maine Attorney General sued Purdue Pharma and members of that family in Kennebec County Superior Court over unfair trade practices in the marketing of opioids. The lawsuit alleges that Purdue Pharma accelerated the opioid epidemic in Maine by misrepresenting the drug's efficacy and risk of addiction. Data show that Mainers spent 5% more on personal consumption than last year. That was the largest increase in personal spending in New England. The spending numbers were released today by the Federal Bureau of Economic Analysis. It pushed total personal spending in Maine to just over $60 billion. The largest single contributor to the spending increase was healthcare. The second biggest was spending on food services and accommodations. The third was the catch-all category of other services. And Governor Janet Mills says the state's debt to the federal government over Riverview Psychiatric Center's certification has been fully paid, plus interest. The center lost its certification in 2013 for multiple violations of federal laws and rules. Mal Leary has details.
The governor says under the LePage administration, Riverview lost its ability to draw down Medicare and Medicaid funds for patients. Counting interest, Mills says the state has had to pay back nearly $80 million. She says most of that amount was set aside in the Budget Stabilization Fund. The state regained certification in January. Health and Human Services Commissioner Jean Lambrew says conditions at the hospital have greatly improved, but work still needs to be done to create needed community-based resources. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And in weather tonight, we'll have rain with some snow mixed in the north. Several inches of accumulation in the mountains with lows overnight in the low 30s to the low 50s. Maine Behavioral Health Care unveiled a new treatment center in South Portland today for people with opioid and other substance use disorders. It's the fifth so-called hub for treatment under the Maine health system and the only one it operates in Cumberland County, which has the most drug overdose deaths in the state. Patty White reports.
The treatment center is expected to serve upwards of 100 patients, and its location in South Portland, says Dr. Linda Durst, the chief medical officer for Maine Behavioral Health Care, fills a need in the region.
In 2018, fully 25% of drug deaths occurred in Cumberland County.
Andy Allen says he couldn't find treatment for opioid addiction in Portland when he first sought it several years ago, but eventually found a treatment center in Biddeford.
Making the trek to Biddeford 4 days a week and working two jobs all throughout the winter was challenging. And I think about the people around this area now that were hesitant because of travel issues. Now they don't have to worry about that.
Allen, who spoke at the treatment center unveiling in South Portland, says he's living proof that treatment works. The center in South Portland provides medication-assisted treatment, therapy, and peer support. Patients start with these more intensive services and, once stable, receive ongoing treatment from a primary care doctor. It's called a hub-and-spoke model.
Without a hub, there can't be any spokes.
Gordon Smith, the state's director of opioid response, says Maine needs more hubs. He says about 900 primary care providers in Maine have waivers to provide medication-assisted treatment. While the number has grown every year, he says not all of these providers actually offer treatment. Having more hubs, he says, would provide a backup for doctors and patients.
It's really important to have a specialty practice where people can be referred if they're not doing well.
Smith says the new treatment center in South Portland reflects the progress Maine is making in offering more medication-assisted treatment. But he says the state still needs to provide more residential treatment options and better support for those in recovery. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Federal fisheries regulators are taking heat from both sides of the debate over protections for the endangered North Atlantic right whale. The latest salvo comes from a conservation group representing public employees, which says the National Marine Fisheries Service ignored its own scientists when it reopened ground fishing areas that had been closed for decades. Fred Bever has the story.
Earlier this year, the Fisheries Service, known as NIMFS, reopened 3,000 square miles of ocean south of Nantucket to ground fishing, allowing the use of gill nets and rope. The agency said it based its decision on previous regulatory reviews and some more recent scientific articles. It said it could not find sufficient evidence to conclude that fishing gear alone causes a decline in the health of large whales and that further review was not necessary. Conservationists say the agency cherry-picked the evidence.
It doesn't pass the straight-face test.
Kyla Bennett is New England director for a national group called Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, or PEER. The group is filing a complaint with the U.S. Inspector General, calling for an investigation of whether top officials at the Fisheries Agency ignored, possibly on purpose, a wealth of recent research publications showing that fishing gear in general, and gill nets in particular, can entangle the whales and pose a threat to the species' survival. Bennett says the agency could have found the evidence in its own backyard.
Most of them were authored by NIMFS scientists themselves. It is beyond the pale to think that NIMFS didn't know about these or is dismissing them out of hand. I don't think it's possible.
Bennett says she hopes that the Office of Inspector General will find that the agency has taken a false position in an ongoing lawsuit over the ground fishing areas and that the areas will be closed again. A NIMFS spokeswoman referred questions to the Inspector General. An OIG spokesman says that agency has yet to formally receive the complaint. Meanwhile, NIMFS has also been under fire from the other side of the issue, from the Maine Lobstermen's Association. MLA has alleged that the agency was ignoring evidence that it had overstated the relative risk Maine's lobster fishery poses for right whales. Here's what MLA Executive Director Patrice McCarron said when she sent her analysis to the feds last month.
Bottom line for us is that we cannot responsibly recommend that our members act alone in undertaking changes in our fishing practices, that all of the parties that pose risk to right whales need to move forward together if we have any chance in saving the species.
This week, NIMFS sent McCarron a 9-page response. Its bottom line was essentially that it was using and providing all the best available science in its development of risk reduction targets, targets it now says could require Maine's lobster fleet to remove half the trap rope it has in the water. A NIMFS spokeswoman, Jennifer Goebel, declined to provide comment other than to say that its work on new rules would continue.
We are continuing to meet with representatives from Maine and are proceeding with rulemaking in the coming months as planned.
McCarron had no immediate comment on the federal response to her critique. Maine's Department of Marine Resources, meanwhile, is expected to issue its own analysis of risk to the whales sometime this month. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And you are listening to Maine Public Radio. Maine composer Aaron Robinson says he was 16 or 17 when he started playing the piano and taught himself the Maple Leaf Rag. Ragtime is still a major musical interest for Robinson, who this Saturday night will stage a musical review in honor of a prolific Maine composer, the late Glenn Jenks, in Camden. Keith Shortall spoke with Robinson about his passion for ragtime, the foundation of so many other forms of American music.
Many people think that ragtime was written for the movies. And you would always hear something like this. And that depicted a very eyelashed batting heroine, or if there was a train coming. But ragtime was never played in the movies. It was played for dancing. And it is specifically derivative of the march, the European march and the Sousa march. And it has a duple rhythm in the left hand. With an oompa on top of it. Now, what ragtime then went on to develop was the syncopated right-hand melody on top of it. That's what gives it its distinct sound, the sound of ragtime. Can't have the other.
You're sort of personally interested in preserving and promoting and showcasing it. Why? What is it about the music that intrigues you?
Well, it's never gone away. Out of all the styles of music over the decades, it's one that has remained. There was a ragtime revival in the 70s with, of course, the movie The Sting. Still hear ragtime even today, and ragtime is the basis of all music that has come after. Jazz, big band, rock and roll, all of that is the foundation from which ragtime is. But ragtime is such a happy music. It was the first music I ever heard, that and church music. And I suppose when you think about ragtime, you either play it or you listen to it because you want to be happy. It makes you happy.
There are no blue notes in it.
There are no blue notes in it. So when you think of blue notes, this is the scale for a regular major scale. What the blues did in jazz was throw in that seventh. And Jelly Roll Morton in 1924 was the reason why we have that. So at the end of something like the Maple Leaf Rag of Scott Joplin, you would hear this being played. Jelly Roll Morton did this. And that meant, let's not end. Let's keep going. Let the joy continue.
Talk about the, I guess it's a tribute to Glenn Jenks. He died a few years ago, but you think you see him as an important cultural musical figure in Maine history. What did he give to us, and what do you want to celebrate?
Glenn Jenks was one of Maine's great composers, not just of ragtime works, but of orchestral, choral, etc. But with ragtime, his music, his legacy, his library is unparalleled. Joplin wrote dozens and dozens of works, not just rags, but waltzes, songs, and opera. And with Glenn, he left a legacy that no other composer has even come close to. He wrote 37 ragtime pieces just for the piano alone. He wrote songs, he wrote a ragtime concerto, and each one of the ragtime pieces that he wrote is a masterpiece, just like Joplin. He wrote waltzes, he wrote novelties, one steps, two steps, classic rags. One of his most famous pieces is called The Wrong Rag. But you can hear how the left hand and the right hand are playing against one another, and they're not in real syncopation as the early ragtime is, but that's how far Glenn had developed the ragtime sound. And for that type of writing, I think it is significant because it's still being played today. And most of the time when a composer writes things in modern day music, they have to play it themselves for it to be heard. When the music itself then takes a life of its own, you know there's something there.
And that's Maine composer Aaron Robinson. He's the producer of the first annual Glenn Jenks Ragtime Review at the Camden Opera House this Saturday, 30 years to the day from when Jenks himself launched his first Harvest Ragtime Review to a sold-out crowd. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation about the dance scene in Maine. I'm Nora Flaherty.